Hey, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I want to welcome you to today's webinar on building an effective training program for new collectors. New collectors need to learn a lot. There's teaching them everything they need to know about the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, how to avoid being baited, how to negotiate, how to connect with consumers, and probably most importantly, where the bathrooms are. Putting all that into a training program that is effective and not excessively long is the goal of every collection operation. So today in this webinar, which is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning, we've got a panel of experts here to talk about how to build a training program for new collectors that teaches them everything they will need to know in a way that will make sure they remember it while getting them on the phones as quickly as possible. As I mentioned, this webinar is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. Peak Revenue Learning's knowledge source will help you take advantage of the spacing and testing effects. These concepts are proven to be among the most effective methods of learning improvement and knowledge retention. The focused iteration training capabilities of knowledge source will have a major impact on employee understanding and application of the skills required to collect more money and the laws and related policies and procedures staff members must be compliant with. You can learn more about them by visiting them online at peakrevenuelearning.com. And I'm actually just going to put a link in the chat that you can use to click on to visit the website. And we're going to hear from Chris Rickman a little later in our program. Let me introduce you now to our panelists. Gwen Gullickson is a training manager at Century Credit. She has worked in the industry for the past decade and spent 2 years as a training manager, where she's responsible for all training, including first and third party collections. She loves rules and thrives in compliance. During her 13-year career in the accounts receivable industry, Kelsey Peters effectively transformed the moral retention and production of an inherited collection team. Her success came from her ability to understand collector challenges, gain the trust and respect of her team, and her dedication to mentoring staff, both new and experienced. In her current role as a director of talent acquisition, training, and development, Kelsey takes a hands-on approach with her trainers to convey the same techniques and values that made her a successful leader of a collection call center. She brings synergy and excitement to the team through her innovative thinking and team building mentality. For the past 12 years, Greg Ruffino has served as a director of training and recruitment for Williams & Fudge, where he oversees the training, development, and onboarding of employees. He's an avid participant in industry conferences and webinars as a presenter and subject matter expert. He is an ACA International Certified Training Specialist, and his training programs have been acknowledged 4 times between 2018 and 2022 by Training Magazine as a top 100 training company in the country. Our format for today's event is going to be a panel discussion. This means that questions from those of you watching us live are encouraged, and we'll get to them during the course of our conversation today. If you've got a question, just drop it in the chat or send it in through the Q&A panel, which does have an anonymous button if you wish to submit questions or comments anonymously. With that, let's jump into our conversation. And first, I thought I'd start by asking each of you what you think the essential components of a new hire training program need to be. Greg, would you mind kicking us off with that?
I would mind, because I usually wait for the other panelists to answer, and then I say that's a good idea.
I know, I've caught on to that. I'm making you go first this time.
It's fine. I'm prepared.
I have no doubt.
Great to be on with Kelsey and Gwen. I believe my first webinar with you ladies, so great to be with you. I'm sure we'll step on each other's toes a few times, but that's okay. Let's see if we agree on this, and I'm happy to not agree on it. But if you're taking your phraseology literally, Mike, the essential components, I just heard Gwen mention that she's got a new hire staff right now on day 3 doing some regulatory testing. So I'll say 2 components are the essential. The regulations of what govern the industry, you can't get you doing anything until you know the laws and the context behind that. And then right behind that is the things that actually make the buttons work, the systems that you are deploying to be super compliant. So start with the regulations of the industry and transition into your systems before you get to the other stuff we'll talk about. What do you think, Kelsey and Gwen?
Well, you got it. Number 1 is the regulatory stuff. and you flow right into everything else. You know, negotiations and the talk off, as essential as they are, I think they take the longest for people to develop. You have to get comfortable with what you're looking at, what accounts look like, what the rules are, and implementing all of those before you can confidently talk to people on the phone.
I definitely agree. And I think I took this another way and kind of broke it out on how we get these hires, this information. So we try to follow some micro learning modules, short bursts of information so they can retain it because they're learning so much so quickly. Multimedia context. So using video, interactive context, content, images, ensuring that you're really tailoring the compliance and the systems and everything to all sorts of learning styles, using your LMS system. And I think what's super effective is pre and post training assessments from these hires that we're bringing in. Their word means a lot. It helps us review our current training structure and make and implement changes when we get that information. I think the biggest thing from a training perspective and what I try to encourage my trainers to do is make it really interactive, engaging, and just to have fun. It's a lot of stuff and it can be scary and intimidating. So trying to throw fun in there is my biggest thing.
I want to piggyback off of that, Kelsey, the having fun part, but I also want to ask the two of you a question. Have you found over the years, let's say the obvious FDCPA training, right? That's probably at the top of everyone's list. And personally here over the years, I have found, this is even post Reg F stuff, that our training tends to get a shorter amount of time as far as what I feel is needed. At the end of the day, I kind of joke with the new hires and say, look, we got to teach you FDCPA for these reasons, but I can summarize it in one bullet point, and that's just like, hey, be nice to people. And obviously, there's a lot more that goes into that. But I find nowadays with the capabilities of, I'm assuming, most, if not all of our systems and some of the rules that it might have built into it, or some of the capabilities on the compliance side have built into it, that it's good that you talk through that with your collector, but maybe the time it takes for them to understand or to deep dive into it maybe is not necessary. Because the last thing I want to do, and depending on who you're hiring, if you're hiring seasoned folks with experience, then that's not a big deal. Then they already know what FDCPA is, and you can maybe onboard them quicker with that background. But if you're hiring people without experience that are from outside the industry, perhaps, and you really need to get them to understand why the law exists and some of the nuance, and it can be overwhelming, it can be burdensome, it could seem like, what did I just get myself involved in? This does not seem like a lot of fun. This seems like a lot of don't do's as opposed to I can do. So I've actually found over the years that the length of time it's taken us to go through it is actually getting shorter and shorter, because maybe we're getting better at talking about it and the systems are helping us be compliant. And one of the things we did with our most recent new hire class in February, I give full credit to my trainers that helped do this, but they put together a game of Family Feud. And they pitted each other against each other. And this was after your formal lesson and quizzing on FDCPA. Let's play a game, totally relaxed, just fun. And it went off really, really well. Like, people appreciate having that relaxed sense, but they know that they're also learning what they're supposed to be taught, and just tying those things together, having a little bit of fun and being a little bit relaxed. But what do you ladies find? Has your time in FDCPA regulation training gotten bigger, the same? You finding more efficiencies?
More efficiencies, for sure. We do, FDCPA and additional regulatory is the first 2 days. They test out on day three, and we identify whether or not this is somebody who's going to be able to move forward in the systems and get to the taking of a phone call. I expect for there to be mistakes. People who leave that section and move on to the next thing, they're still going to make mistakes. They're still going to not fully understand how to implement all of those rules, but that's where the additional training comes in. You have to let somebody kind of run and fall before you can let them walk effectively. You got to learn as you go. I would be so surprised to have people roll out to the floor and just be perfect from day one. It took a long time. I started as a collector in this company, so like I know day one to today now in the system, and we've definitely change the points that we hit over the years. And I think that that's what continues with the growth, is just kind of being able to roll with the punches, and the training runs right along with that, because everybody, you know, it's not just new hire training, it's retraining the entire floor when something changes. You have to expect the mistakes and be willing to keep the education continued through the tenure of the relationship with the collector.
Definitely.
Go ahead, Kelsey, go ahead.
I think we're getting more efficient at it as well. I've tried a billion different approaches. I love the family feud idea, Greg. We're probably going to steal that.
I have a, it's a really big PowerPoint, but I can send you or people in the chat a free, or it's a donut. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I can put a link in the chat where I found a family feud game. You can either download it for free, or you can donate to the site $5-$10 if you like. But let me find that. I'll put it in there. We got Jeopardy, Family Feud. Beautiful blank template that have served me well over the years. Sorry, Kelsey, go ahead.
I love that, and I'm sure others would too. So yeah, more efficient for sure, and I think something Gwen mentioned is an approach we take is it's intense and it can be intimidating, and just reiterating to the hires that you will learn this over time. We're sharing the knowledge now. You'll start to retain it, and then you're going to get really efficient and accurate with how you're going to plug it into your collection call.
Kelsey, you mentioned something in an earlier answer that I wanted to follow up on, because it wasn't one of the questions I was planning to ask today, but I probably should have asked it, so I want to make sure to talk about it, and that is tailoring training to all different sorts of learning styles. You've got all these different people coming in. Some like to read, some like to prefer to watch, some prefer to listen. How do you kind of take that into account so that you're not either boring people or setting people up so that they're not in the best position to try and remember something because it's not the way they prefer to learn?
So I think a lot of people learn by doing. So we try to allow our trainers to, you can readily tell when people are disengaged or they're bored. We're doing all of our training remote, so it's a different approach. You can tell just by body language, they're expected to be on camera, that they're not focused. We find opportunities to give them control to drive. Whether we're doing system navigation, the trainer can give the hire the mouse and walk them through it. So it kind of, you know, that helps the learners that want to actually do. Typically, we try to get a pulse for that agent as well, just to identify, and then we'll rehash and go back at those. The delivery of those in the days throughout the training process.
Yeah, the multimedia, Mike, I think is super important nowadays because it's easy and it's kind of what's expected, and it's impossible. Like, wouldn't it be a beautiful thing where you could have a new hire class where you could say, okay, everyone in this class has the exact same learning style and everyone wants things delivered in the exact same way, when that's never going to happen. So the only thing you can do is appease all parties by having all things available. And I saw there was a question in the chat there, like, about what LMS is, or learning management system. They come in many shapes and sizes. I believe Chris Rickman will be telling us about his product here soon. But we've used ours very strategically with new hires, where we can create a path of a whole bunch of different videos, quizzes, documents. And one of the great things we've been doing with our new hires, both remote and in person, is giving them some downtime or some self-study time, especially when you're that remote hire where you're on camera all day, right? You're in a camera room setting. It does kind of get exhausting, at least in a lot of people's opinions. And you could say, hey, guys, we're still going to progress and learn, but I'm going to let you have some self-study downtime, cameras off, go into your learning management system, into your new hire training path. And I want you to watch this video, and take this quiz, and meet me back on the Zoom channel at this time. And people just, they appreciate that, right? And on my end, I can see if they're watching, and I can get metrics on their engagement and how they did on the quizzes and all that stuff. But it gives them a breakup of the day. It gives them a different medium. It lets them relax. And it's not just on camera or in the same room for the entirety of the day. Just a way to break it down in multimedia fashion.
Yeah, we try to engage everybody as well. I mean, you guys touched on kind of all the basics, the videos, the worksheets, the We utilize shadows. I try to give everybody the opportunity to work at their own pace within a structure. We're expected to be at certain checkpoints by certain days. But giving everybody their own time, you know, somebody's going to be the first one done reading through a section, while maybe it takes somebody longer to process the section, but their comprehension was better than the person who ran through it really fast. But maybe that person learns better by shadowing somebody who's doing the job. And so by being able to accommodate everybody, I definitely think you have a better chance of keeping all the people that came to your class.
Yeah, absolutely. And some other things too, like you said, when people will take things on at different times, where I could say, hey, look, you guys have an hour and I have two videos. Each of these videos are 15 minutes. That's 30 minutes. And both of them have a 5-question quiz. So that's maybe 5 more minutes. So that's 35 minutes. And I'm giving you an hour. So right. If you're done early, then I want you to go here and listen to some of these calls that we saved for you. You can listen to these calls. And then, of course, I want you to find a 5 or 10 minute break. So you're letting them do it at their pace, but you're giving them a start and an end time. So if I say, look, literally, I'm giving you 40 minutes of literal work, but an hour window to do it in, that means halfway through, get up and take your break or whatever. But it's right. Meeting them where they are able to have a little bit of a say or control in their day or in that segment of that training.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great move. It works here.
Very, very cool.
Is it a situation where you have to ask people, what do you prefer? Or, you know, as you gain experience in training, you kind of sort of pick it up quickly in terms of sort of seeing what works best for different people?
Mike, I think if you ask a whole group what they prefer, you're asking yourself for a headache. I think if you're more on an individual scale, right? Like if you're working with one person on an audit, or you're really trying to help this person increase their understanding, comprehension, skill sets in a certain area, yeah, absolutely. Tell them, like, hey, I have multiple ways I can deliver this, help you, show you. I think I just saw in the chat there, so I'll pull it back up, show them, help them, whatever. What works best for you? Yeah, I think on an individual, yeah, I have 4 different ways I can show and teach you this, which is your preferred way, but not to the whole class. For the whole class, I have all those ways. I'll just keep mixing them in and out.
Right. You don't need to ask the entire group, but you can I let the whole class know, listen, if what we're doing isn't working for you, get with me and we'll figure out a different way for you. Maybe the way I presented this question doesn't work for you. You know the information, but my question is terrible and it makes you question everything you know. Allowing people to know that there's an option there without, you know, overwhelming everybody with what all the options are is a great way to get people to individually come up to you and identify their needs as well.
Yeah, like on day one, Mike, I asked them, what is your job this week? Like this week, what is your job? And you get a bunch of confused answers or whatever. And I said, well, here, let me answer for you. Your job this week. By the way, we're not going to make phone calls until day whatever, and we'll get to that, right? That's a question that's already come up. When do they make their first calls and all that? I say for the first X days, your job is not to be a great debt collector. Your job is to be a great student. And a lot of people in front of us probably have not been students for a long time or have never really been great students in their life. That's why they're debt collectors. I'm kidding. I was a debt collector too. Kidding. What you say to them is your job is to be a great student. And what do great students do? They take notes. They ask questions. When they're told to watch the video, they actually watch the video. They take notes home. They collaborate with each other. Your job is to be a great student. So show me you can be a great student. Set the table, right? Right off the bat.
Love it. All right, we're just going to hit the pause button really briefly on the conversation, which has been great so far. I'm really looking forward to picking it up. But I did want to invite Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning, the sponsor of today's webinar, to say a few words. Chris.
Thank you, Mike, and hello, everyone. We're grateful to have the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides a knowledge source, the leading knowledge skills and compliance training application for companies with collection operations. Knowledge Source is used by our clients to simplify and streamline the cost of training, both new and existing employees, whether on-site or remote. One problem many organizations share is considering employee development as an expense rather than an investment this view can have a detrimental impact on morale, motivation, and even retention. According to a study by IBM, employees who feel they are not being developed to help reach their goals are 12 times more likely to leave their company. Most of the folks that we speak to recognize that the old paradigm of onboarding training followed by annual refresher training is inferior to a model where spaced, repetitive micro-learning promotes much deeper learning. And everyone also is familiar with the rapid loss of knowledge following training events like onboarding. By utilizing the focused micro-learning capabilities of Knowledge Source, your staff members can much more quickly master and then maintain their mastery of the skills and knowledge necessary for your company to provide high-quality compliance services. Knowledge Source clients are companies that want to build and maintain a high level of assurance that staff members have mastered and are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge and skills needed, expected of them when they're interacting with consumers. And Knowledge Source will automatically build documentation of your training efforts for clients, for prospective clients, and for regulators such as the CFPB. In summary, Knowledge Source will increase revenue, decrease risk, promote accountability, lower the cost of training, and help reduce turnover. To find out more about us, please visit peakrevenuelearning.com or give me a call, 803-521-0031. We are here to make your job easier and help you and your company be successful. Thank you.
Chris, what was that phone number again?
803-521-0031.
Excellent. All right. I just put it in the chat for everybody, along with the link to your website so they can get in touch with you. But thanks to Chris and Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. All right. So the next question I was going to ask is actually the first one that came in from someone in the audience, and that is, how long are new hires in training before taking a live call? And the question I was actually going to ask is, how long should new hires be trained? So I'll throw that out there. Kelsey, maybe you can talk us through what the process is at your operation.
Sure. So we start with compliance training, and then we go into what we define as departmental training, system navigation, all of that fun stuff, learning our system, the phone system, the payment processing system. And then by week three, really week four, we have them taking live calls. Obviously, we have them doing mock calls, practicing before then. But the middle of week three into week four, again, every class varies. They're different in terms of how quickly they're grasping concepts and getting comfortable with jumping on the phone. So I'd say by week four, for sure, they are on the phone. We try to get them sent over to their new supervisors after week four. And then there's kind of a soft 30-day additional training period where our trainers are still plugged in, looking at scorecards, checking for compliance fails, and then 60 days, we're hoping that they're graduating from training and then they're fully assigned to their supervisor.
I love that that's your answer, because it'll be drastically different to mine, and 130 or so people logged in right now will have a lot of different opinions and answers to that as well. So I'll give my take, Kelsey, and it's very different than yours, and that's okay, because if it works for you, that's all that matters. So we just changed ours for a very long time. We made our first calls on day five. And Kelsey, I believe I heard you just say something on week three. That's a big difference, right? So I would be able to tell people on day one, hey, your job this week is to be a great student. And by the way, you're not even going to make a consumer outreach for 5 days. And you can almost see a sense of relief, right? You go, oh, I don't even have to do this. I don't have to worry about that. It's several days away from now, and you kind of go through training. But if you've ever done something like skydiving, bungee jumping, or maybe even standing on the edge of a pool, and you're kind of afraid or nervous to jump, if you catch my drift here, right? The longer you stay there, the more scary it gets, right? I've seen people freak out about the bungee jump, and they stay there on the edge for a very long time. It only gets harder. You almost just need someone to push you. So going back to our February class, our last new hire class, the training team there decided, hey, you're going to take your first phone call on the third day. Now, that doesn't mean you're off on a loan by yourself. You're one-on-one. You have a trainer one-on-one with you, and we'll do it for a small pocket of time. And, you know, we have a system that is feeding them, not really a scripting system, but more of a playbook. So their hand is being held. We're not shoving them into the deep end. We're jumping into the shallow end with them, so to speak. But what we have found that that does is, you know, if when we waited to day five, the initial response was, whoo, relaxed, relief. Oh my gosh, that's great. But then as the week continues and you're sitting in this training environment and you're just talking about this thing, you're almost building up a different kind of anxiety. Like at some point in time, it's like, when is this thing going to actually happen? Is it going to happen? So we've had great success with the last class by getting them onto the phone on that third day for a pocket of time with great support, but it immediately gets that fear and anxiety and it eliminates it. And I believe it's helped us move forward with that person and put their mind at ease when we're not like, see, you did it. It wasn't that bad. You survived. Now we can move forward and that's eliminated from your brain. And not to make too many comparisons, but you know, sometimes you discover folks pretty quickly off that unfortunately might not be a great long-term fit versus we didn't really get you into that role until a few weeks down the line and we've been paying you and spending that time and energy on you. So happy to split the hairs on that, but there's different approaches for different folks. And I think going forward, for a long time now, we're going to be, you're making calls on day three, but don't worry, we're not going to let you fail. We got you. What about you, Glenn?
I mean, my jaw dropped. You saw it happen.
I saw it, yeah. And
only because I recently stretched our class out from 5 days to 10 days because there was so much more of it. But like, just really, we weren't having enough time. My people hit the phone on day seven. They're in the classroom still day 7 to 10 on the phone with me. And then they hit the floor day 10 that Friday. It's like, here you go. You're going out to your people. But then they continue in the training process for the next 80 days. They stay in training for 90 days, but they're live. They're doing it. They're getting this constant attention from QA and stuff. But three is impressive. It makes me want to up some things a little bit there. I like the way you do things. And so I might steal that idea of going out. It'll take me a minute, but I would steal that idea of moving forward a little bit. I like the idea of, well, you did it now. Are you going to continue on with this?
Yeah, and I'm trying to type, talk, and think, and I see your comment up there, Jessica Mobley. Yeah, of course, there's, I wouldn't use the word anxiety, but to be clear, the trainer's right there with you. They're in your ear. They're watching and listening. So as an example, if I know we all have different size agencies and different resources, so I keep that in mind. Let's say I have a class of 8 new hires, just as an example, and I have 4 available trainers. And that could be me pulling from another team. Hey, I have a trainer who works one of our tenured advanced teams. They don't need you there every minute of the day. We got new hires here. I need to borrow you for an hour or two, whatever it takes to fill the numbers. But I have 8 new hires. I'll say 4 of them. Hey, 4 of you, you're going to go into our learning management system and take these courses. And while you're doing that, these 4 folks, you're going to make their first phone call and you're going to have a trainer sitting directly next to you, headphone dialed in. I'm in your ear, sitting next to you, watching the screen. Or if you're remote, same thing. I'm just not physically sitting next to you, but I'm watching and I'm hearing you. And you're not making these calls. The calls will be connected to you. And here's our playbook script and go for it. And there's really not a whole lot in the compliance realm that they can mess up. They could maybe mess up a payment arrangement. They could, but the team lead is right there to help them. So from a compliance standpoint, not a whole lot can or will happen because the training wheels are still on and mom and dad are behind the bike still holding the seat. You're not falling off and you got a helmet on and you're going 2 miles an hour. It's just really to crack the ice, relieve that anxiety and say, see, it wasn't so bad. You were able to push the buttons. You had a connection with the human being. They didn't kill you. And you live to fight another day. So let's get back to the training room and continue on with our lessons.
Craig just made my whole day longer because now I'm rethinking the pace of my class.
No, Gwen, it's not to change. It's just perspective, right? I take your perspective and Kelsey's and everyone else's and say, how do I tweak mine to to match yours. That's all it is.
I think it's great, though. I've never considered, you know, we pushed it back. I never considered pushing it forward as an opportunity to boost what they're doing. I thought, you know, I like the different perspective, too.
Yeah, and at one point in time, it was, you're not calling until the seventh day, and then we were able to trim it down to the fifth day, and what works best. So there you go. Yeah, I see Jessica, do we do mock calls? Our collection staff will watch. They'll shadow. They'll sit next to someone and watch them do the job, headset in, listening to everything. So they'll see all that happening. We'll do shadow sessions where collectively as a group, they're watching a collector work. So it's not like when they sit and make those first phone calls, they have no idea what it looks or sounds like. You've done a bunch of shadow sessions on that.
For sure.
Okay.
You know, filed under the there's no one right way. Someone posted, we ask our new hires when they feel comfortable. We'll sit with them until they're ready to go. By day 4 to 6, they want to get on the phone to see if they can do it.
Yeah. Again, I think the initial thought is I sent my new hire out there and they're on their own, and we just hope for the best and cross our fingers. That's not the case. It's a training wheel environment. It's all about relieving the anxiety and pushing forward. Yeah.
Is there an optimal size that companies should be looking for new hire training classes? You know, obviously I'm going to guess smaller is better, but depending on the size of the shop, that's not always possible. Or is there an optimal ratio that companies, you know, should have for sort of trainers to students, Gwen?
I mean, currently I'm still running all these classes full-time myself. I prefer the number 8. It's a nice number. Statistically, they're not all going to make it through the class, and I'll end up with, you know, five or six typically. That's a nice amount to hit the floor. It gives you the right amount of bodies in the building and, you know, ability to interact with all of them as well. I think if when I get to more than 8 to 1, we start getting to the point where maybe some people are getting a little neglected and not getting the one-on-one attention that they need when they have specific, you know, questions and things that need addressed.
Yeah, the size, I mean, that's a good question, Mike, but that's completely dependent on the agency itself. Yeah. Obviously, you don't want your ratios to get out of hand. I think the biggest class I can recall that we ever onboarded or attempted to was 12, and that was only once because we felt we had 12 candidates that were really good that we pulled together at that time frame, but it just became too many moving parts for it to feel effective and a lot of energy burnt. But at the same time, at an agency size of mine, I'd rather not onboard one single person, right? Like, come on, we can find at least 2 or 3 more. So to Gwen's point, you have to know what that number is. And I'd much rather have a class that's too small than a class that's too big. A class that's too big, you're going to be spending a lot of time and energy and resources, and no one's going to get the maximum benefit. Versus a class that's maybe medium or too small, at least you know they're going to get the proper attention and the best ability to be set up for success. So based on my agency, I think between 6 and 8 people is a really good sweet spot. Plus or minus 1 is cool. Anything more or less than that window, maybe we need to reconsider when our next new hire class is.
I think for our agency, we've had a class of 12. It's a lot, just like Gwen and Greg mentioned. You can lose sight of a lot of things, and the hires get, they're just not as engaged. I also like 6 to 8 for a good intimate class size as well.
There's a lot in this chat, Mike, which is great. Exactly what we want to see. I want to like help address some of the questions that they keep flying in. I think Sarah had a good one going. Look, I can't even keep up. Mike, help me out.
I'm trying. It's like drinking through a fire hose. Are we looking for questions or comments? Because there's a lot of comments and people sharing their experience, and then there's a couple of questions that sort of take us in different directions here.
Yeah, so Selena's asking, like, is there, you know, 12 per trainer? And it just depends on how you set it up. I could tell you I had 12 as a new hire class, but they're going to a team. that's got 14 leaders. So it's just really, how do you get 12 people on the phone for the first time, right? It's not the hardest thing to have 12 people in front of you in a classroom. I could have one person or 12 people, the same words and message comes out perhaps, but how do I get 12 people logged into a system? How do I get 12 people to take these calls under a guided, observed way? That's what it really comes down to. So no, it would not be one trainer for 12 people. It's going to be, like I said, I have 14 leaders that would get involved in that training as well. So again, depending on the size of your agency, greatly impacts that number.
We have a couple of questions. I think I can categorize into maybe one overall question on the sort of topic of, I guess, fatigue. We've got one asked, how does everyone overcome all the required client modules? I feel like it creates learner fatigue, it interferes with the pace of the new hire period. And then we have another question, how long is your class each day, knowing that people stop learning at certain points? How do you sort of maybe take that, you know, people getting bored, people, you know, people's attention span running out? How do you sort of deal with that?
Just break up the day. I mean, you cannot sit and read the FDCPA and FCRA and all of the other abbreviations all day for 2 days. And we cram a lot of it in there, but you have to break it up. We split up into shadows. I do, like I said, I let everybody go at their own pace and we meet back up. And so if you have surpassed everybody else's that, you shift out to an extra shadow. You have extra time to go see what's happening with the job. Maybe pop in if we're having a call calibration with a team. You might get to go sit in on that and see the other aspects of, you know, all the continued training that happens as well.
Yeah. In that question, Mike, I have many clients and they all have different kind of do's and don'ts or parameters, and I want to make sure that my collection staff is up to speed on all of those things before they work those accounts. We don't want to upset the client or do something wrong. And here, I'll give you a perspective. At my office here, we have close to 1,500 clients. Those are individual line item clients. And you better believe that across all those clients, there's a bit of nuance. And some clients you got to verify with multiple points of data, others don't, there's different. So and the list goes on, right? So there's no conceivable way to train that to study. What you need is your system to work for you. And that means when that client pops up on the screen, if there's something that is additional or different, it needs to be presented to the collector in their face. So as an example, a lot of our clients, they're perfectly cool with us validating or verifying the individual with just their name. Can I speak to Mike Gibb? This is Mike. Hey, Mike, Minnie Miranda. We're done. Other clients say, I need to get your date of birth and or address for social, right? Well, I don't need you to memorize which clients do that. I need you to be trained to read the playbook when it comes up on the screen. So my training is follow the process, follow the systems. Don't worry about memorizing all of these one-off client nuances, because then your training becomes 3 weeks long, or you're just talking about one-offs and people get real bored and confused at that kind of stuff. So use your systems to that advantage. And that's kind of how I mentioned FDCPA training gets a little bit shorter and shorter, is because I really don't need you to memorize which five states you need permission to speak to the spouse in. I just need the computer screen to tell you. What do you think? What do you think, Kelsey?
I agree with that so much, and I also want to hit learners fatigue. Like Gwen mentioned, I think it's important to have shadow time. I've been in an environment where we do half-day content, and then we send them out to the floor to shadow. Right now, we are learning for 8 hours, or we're training for 8 hours a day, and we're at 2 hours of whether it's a video or, you know, something that isn't just additional information, but is useful for them to be successful throughout their training.
Yeah, I agree. I think part of breaking up your new hires into two categories, either experienced folks that have come to you, they've done the job, they've been in a work environment that is mostly stationary at a computer on a phone, regardless of collections or not, or experience. They know that the majority of their day is like all of us right now, stationary, phone, computer, versus the person you hire that doesn't have that experience or maybe came from another industry. You might need to condition them into what a full day of work looks like. So to Kelsey's point is you're not going to 0 to 60 where, all right, today we leave the training room, tomorrow, 8 hours on the phone. kind of to my point on day three, that first phone call session might be an hour and a half, 2 hours max, right? And then you're done with that task. And as we progress, you're not having a full 8 hour day on the phone, probably close to what Kelsey would say, into that third or fourth week. All the way up into that time, it's classroom time, phone time, self-study time, phone time, you know, take a break time, phone time. So it's never really a full 8 hour days of calls until you're a few weeks in, but you build up their conditioning. So eventually the training is kind of running out and it's like, all right, let's sit down and make some real money now. But condition them into those long days on the phone. Don't break it up, the self-study, videos, training, shadowing, back to phone calls, mix it up on them. And Kelly Kruger is asking us to call her crazy, 20 plus people in a training room.
I saw that.
Yeah, you are crazy, Kelly, in all the good ways.
So we talked about sort of the size of an operation, you know, trainers to new hires. If an agency isn't big enough to have its own trainer or training staff, who should be in charge of training new collectors?
Don't make me do all the answers. Gwen, what you got? Come on.
I mean, I don't know. We've always had a training program. We've varied the size of our training program over the years. We've had just one person handling everything, and then they hit the floor and it's up to the management and the senior collectors to kind of edge in on that. We've had such, you know, times and places where we are large enough that we have unit leads, several of them, you know, kind of like you're saying, you have the additional staff to be able to help with that training as they go out. We've fluctuated through that, you know, through the years. I think that it's kind of a team effort. You know, I run compliance and training, but my operations department, they help out tremendously in the training. They're out there with them in the day to day. I know about things as they come up. I know about problems that are happening after they're a problem. But if we can catch them on a live phone call, you know, they stay hooked up to a splitter for the first 90 days. Somebody can hop on that call. Somebody can parrot them through it. Just, you know, a lot of these things are subjective to the scenario, to the collector themselves.
Yeah, I think in that scenario, it's good to have a chain of custody or accountability, right? We definitely understand that there's lots of agencies out there of that size. And if you're asking nothing but my opinion on it, I would say either the person that hired the collector or the person that's going to be their supervisor should be doing the training. That is if there isn't a specific training department or a specific training staff. My particular office is big enough where I do a lot of the recruiting and onboarding and some of the initial training, but then I hand them off to their team leaders that they're going to be with on that initial team, and they're going to do a lot of that training from there, versus a scenario where you have an employee in this department who does all the training, and then they say goodbye, and now you're on this new team here, and there might be some miscommunication and expectations or best practices or whatever. But I think if you're a small agency, then I'm also assuming that you only have a small number of collectors, and you might have that person be able to have the time that trains them is the one that is ultimately their supervisor. So you're kind of killing two birds with one stone, so to speak. Some kind of accountability and chain of custody. But if you hire them in your small agency, then train them or get their team leader that they're going to be with to train them every step of the way.
Agreed.
I like that. I've been in an environment where the supervisors were the ones doing the interview, and then they were responsible for the training once they were in-house. The thing I like about that is you're fostering that positive relationship from interview to training to them actually being on their team. And if you can tie the supervisor into that from interview until they're live and actively collecting, I think it enhances the experience for these agents. Obviously, my current environment is much different. We do have a full-blown training staff, but we did take the approach of interview, train, and that was all the supervisor's responsibility.
Yeah, and either way, whoever is the trainer or who's going to be that supervisor team lead, you should be in a good practice of sharing their resume or application, right? I would assume that if you're turning over or bringing in a new hire class and you have the trainer, let's say the people that don't do the interviews, the trainer, the team leads, you should pass them the resumes and say, hey, let's sit down, or I want you to see who's hired or who's coming to your team. To Kelsey's point, right, oftentimes the interviewer, you're getting to know that person a little bit personally. They're going to tell you things about their past, things that make them tick, things about their old job that they didn't like about their old job, and that's why they left. And sometimes in those first couple of days, you need to leverage that information. And I can be like, Gwen, remember when we were interviewing, you were telling me about X, Y, Z? Well, and then I fill in the blank with whatever angle I'm trying to come at you with, but I'm using that personal information you gave me that I know about you from the interview process. So I think it's very helpful with retaining people when you know these things about them that they've disclosed to you. And that's why it's good that the interviewer is either involved or the people training and the supervisors know, hey, you should not have someone as a new hire in your class and not know what their last job was. Obviously, you can do like, let's get to know each other and play some icebreakers, but you should know what their work history was so you can draw correlations. Hey, 3 years ago when you were working at that place, I bet you experienced X, Y, and Z, right? Well, this is just the same, just different words. Something to that effect. So sharing that information about people's past helps with that accountability and keeping people retained.
A couple of comments came in. We just now have started to have a training staff. Ours was a mix of HR, leads, supervisors, managers, and shadowing with senior staff, etc. So Gary wrote, as someone who doesn't have a trainer or compliance team, one of the things that has helped is assigning new hire advocates. I take a more senior team member and make them their buddy during their first month. If the new hire sticks around, their advocate can get some retention bonuses and benefits.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do it. You can name anything you want, mentors, advocates. We all know that a little incentive can go a long way. You don't need to put those folks on salary. Just give them acknowledgement, give them some CRCs or whatever that word is. Let them know that they're appreciated. But yeah, I think that was from Gary. That's a great comment. And we use those in a certain capacity. I think we just call them mentors. But that goes a long way too, because at the end of the day, that's the concept of you are the trainer, the company owner, the manager, whoever, you're just mom and dad. And after a while, you get tired of hearing the same thing from mom and dad who are trying to give you life advice. Sometimes you need your really cool brother or sister or aunt or uncle to tell you, hey, this is how it really is. This is what it's like in the trenches. And the message comes across a lot different. And that could be your new hire advocate. That could be your mentor who's like, look, I make some good money here and this is how I do it. I stay compliant, but this is how I do it. And I'm here to advocate for you and do what I tell you to do, and you'll be fine. That message might come across different than that trainer guy who keeps telling you don't do this and don't do that.
Let's see here. What area of collection training do you find that most programs maybe tend to overlook? You know, if you're looking at your collectors that go through the training program 30, 60, 90 days out, you know, what area of that training do you think maybe you wasn't focused on enough, or maybe just kind of wasn't paid attention to enough? You know what, I'll pick. Sorry, because Greg keeps going first. Kelsey.
I'd have to probably ask. I think this is where post-surveys can come in handy 30, 60, 90 days after training. If you're surveying your hires, they're going to be the ones that are going to give you that concrete evidence that we missed something that we can then take back to the training team, review and see where we want to plug it in. That's kind of, I think, the best way to do it, because we can assume and we might be plugging in additional content that just makes it all overwhelming. So their feedback is vital.
Have you had situations like that where you've talked to collectors and they've given you feedback and you've gone back and made changes to the training because of that feedback?
Yes. Yep.
There's a lot in that answer, Mike, and it's a very good question. And some of the notes I had written down were, you know, I hate to say it too, but like ergonomics, you're talking like the low hanging fruit, right? I want to make sure, because I want to sound silly here. Because like you see them after a few days, they're like this on the phone. And sorry, you get the idea, right? And after a while, not only do you sound terrible, but it's not good for your body. It's going to take a toll effectively. So in all reality, I don't have an hour-long class on ergonomics, but I might talk to you about it for like 10 or 15 minutes, and I'll give you a sheet of paper, some diagrams on it, and say, I checked the box. I warned you, take care of your ergonomics. That's just one thing. Another thing would be just the mental side of the game of collections. And I can talk to you about FDCPA and I can tell you how our systems work, but I really need you to understand the perspective. And the perspective is you're looking at baseball averages here. If you bat a 200 or 250 or 300 in my office, you're going to be an all-star. And that means 7 or 8 out of 10 people are going to tell you no, or hang up on you, or not have the most pleasant conversation with you. And you can very easily chalk that up as you're a loser and you're terrible at your job, when in reality, no, that's the numbers we work with. So ergonomics, I was kind of half joking, but it is a real thing. But the mental side and the perspective, I try to drill down the new hires is, if you can understand and accept the perspective on what we're doing and success rates, you'll be totally fine. If you understand, you have X number of no's to get to a few yeses. Those few yeses make all the difference in the world. And you got to understand that. And those that do understand it can build long-term tenured careers. Others kind of burn out because they weren't mentally prepared to understand the numbers side of the game.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I had written down self-regulation. Like the one thing that I notice I don't cover enough with people once they hit the floor is it's like, I mean, it's up to you how many phone numbers you dial in a day. If you are dialing less because you're spending too much time reading all the previous notes, and that you're less likely to get people on the phone. And that is something that I consistently find that it's, you know, you have to kind of double down with people on, is that we might work in a team environment, but everything that you do is directly driven by your effort.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
What area of training do you think is toughest for new collectors to learn? Are there, you know, is it the FDCPA? Is it, you know, how to negotiate or how to connect? Are there other things that, you know, memorizing the mini Miranda? I don't know. What have you found to sort of be the area where collectors tend to get stuck the longest in terms of kind of getting over, you know, or learning something, Gwen?
Staying objective-based on the phone call, not getting lost in the conversation that you're having with the person, without, you know, using that information to get to the end goal of finding a solution. My people don't tend to go out there and just skirt the rules. They're almost focused on them too much. Oh, I can't say this. I can't do that. You can engage with these people, have a rapport building conversation, and still use the information that they provided to collect the debt. It's just all about how you control the conversation and keep your eyes on the prize.
I had a good idea. I had a thought there, Mike.
We'll share it.
No.
I've moved to the edge of my seat, Greg. I'm ready.
It's okay. I got lost reading all the comments. So we're good.
Should everybody who goes through training become a collector?
No. Not no.
I remembered my thought. And here's the answer. There's two answers here. The answer to that question, I saw Kelsey and Gwen shaking no. And the answer, yeah, no. No, of course not. But it comes back to one of the toughest things or things for people to learn is that human beings aren't always very truthful. And a lot of people might have that glass half full, the rose tinted glasses, whatever. And you can do some audits in you hear the consumer give an explanation or a stall or an objection, and you hear your collector go, okay, well, thank you, have a good day. And you're like, the guy's lying to you. And they're like, what? No, he says he doesn't have any money. No, he's lying to you. You couldn't hear that? So for collectors, especially the newer side or less experienced folks, to understand that when people have their backs against the wall in a financial situation, it's totally normal for them to be defensive and to say whatever they need to say to relieve themselves of this conversation today. So just how do I do that without becoming a negative person? How do I leave my job now and walk out in the street and not think that everyone's lying or being deceptive to me? It's just getting you to understand that this particular person at this moment in life is in a tough spot and we're here to hold them accountable. And if we take everyone at face value as the first thing they say to us, then you're never going to get paid. And this is going to be a short-term experiment for you. You have to hold people accountable. They can tell you whatever they want, and you have to come back with the right answer. And that oftentimes is, I understand. Thank you for telling me that. But let me go through the situation with you and give you some options, right? You hold them accountable. And that's not always easy for people to do. So to answer your other question is, does everyone that goes through training end up being a collector? And the answer is no. You could say, hey, you have a lot of customer service on your resume. We took a chance with you, and you might be better suited to go back to a customer service environment because we are customer service picked up a notch with the accountability and the people we deal with.
I agree with that. I think I always break it down to, if the new hire has the will, we can get them the skills to be a good agent. But if you're battling an individual that doesn't have the will, it's not going to be a successful relationship.
Yeah. That's fine. Not everyone's lying, but a lot of them are. Maybe it's not even a lie. It's just, they're in a tough spot and they just need this conversation in.
Here's a comment. Getting a new hire to be able to read the room is the hardest part. They want to believe everyone, which is why I work on trying to have them practice ways of asking questions that get you answers that skirt around the I don't have money stall that might help you find out they can pay. Asking open-ended questions is very important.
Yep. I tell people I interview with, the number one quality or skill set I'm looking for in anybody, regardless of what your resume says, is, are you a conversationalist? And that just means I'm happy to keep talking. I'll talk to anybody. I'll ask you those open-ended questions. I can say things in a good tone and a good speed, or empathize or read the room. All those things come under that umbrella. But the person that says, thank you for telling me that, have a good day, off of one simple stall, is not a good conversationalist. That's someone just appeasing somebody and looking to avoid confrontation. And a lot of times people think of confrontation as yelling and screaming and negative and fighting. No, confrontation is just, I will stand here and I'll hear what you have to say, but I'm going to bounce something right back to you and I'm not going anywhere. I am politely, peacefully, professionally confronting you. And I'll take it from Mary Shores. She said, two best words I can use are, I understand. I understand you don't have any money today. That doesn't mean the call is going to end. We're going to talk through this.
Right. People take a logical response of confrontation.
Yep. How do we vet them? Yeah, you vet them in the interview by Selena. I was told this once, and I'm working on making it the case. In an interview, maybe you do 30% of the talking, and they do 70, or maybe it's 40-60. I don't know the exact number. But if it's 50-50, the interview's wrong. If it's 55-45, it's wrong. They need to have the heavy side of talking. And even if that means uncomfortable moments of silence, you need to ask me questions now.
Right.
If they don't have any questions for you, how are they going to be with your consumers? Your job is to keep asking questions or providing solutions and options until it's resolved. So you're going to come work for my company and you have no questions?
They should almost be hiring you to be their employer.
Yeah, you just need a paycheck. You'll take the first person that says yes.
Well, unfortunately, we've just about run out of time. This has been a great conversation. A lot of great comments and ideas flowing from the panelists and from people watching and listening. So thanks to everybody. But we'll wrap things up the way we wrap up all webinars here on AccountsRecovery.net. And that's going around our panel and asking them to share what they think the most important takeaway is from today's conversation. If you're going to walk away from this discussion remembering one thing or trying one new thing, what do you want that one thing to be? Gwen, we'll start with you, then Kelsey, then Greg, you'll get the last word today.
I mean, the only thing I can think about is that Greg gets those people on the phone in 3 days. And I think that to remember that you're constantly learning new ways to do things and to be able to adapt as you move forward is really important.
I've been thinking about day three since Greg mentioned it. The webinar, it's an interesting concept, but I think it would highlight, you're going to identify very quickly the people that don't want to do the job on day three instead of day 30, 45, 60, when they're actually plugged in and taking those calls. I'm also going to take away family feud because we love to have fun.
Cool. Yeah, I shared that link for the games. Some people asked what are some sample questions. I put the email in there. If you email me, I'll gladly reply. But one more time, like the day three thing, I give full credit to my trainers, Candace and Sheikha, for saying, we're going to do it. And I said, go for it. What's the worst that can happen? Like, and nothing bad happened. So that's what we're going to keep doing. But my one takeaway, I'll piggyback off of what Chris Rickman said. And oftentimes companies, managers, owners don't like to look at the expense side of training involvement, paying the trainer, paying for the product, whatever the case is. And he used the word, it's an investment. And that's really exactly what it is. For whoever's listening, oftentimes what we're doing gets overlooked or overthought. Budgets don't really hit our departments very clearly sometimes. And that's a major mistake. So for those of you who write the checks and spend the money, it's an investment in your people, in all things training. That's what still makes the world go round. Thanks for everyone for being here.
Excellent. Well, Greg, Gwen, Kelsey, I want to thank the three of you for sharing your expertise today. On behalf of everybody who watched and listened and I think is walking away with some great ideas, thanks to each of you for being here. Chris, I want to thank you and the team at Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. Again, peakrevenuelearning.com is the website. Everyone should go check it out. To everybody who watched and listened and participated, really appreciate that. Love seeing all the ideas, questions, comments, conversation flowing through the chat today. It was great. So thanks to each of you for that. We're back tomorrow, 1 o'clock Eastern, with a webinar on pricing hacks, accessing public healthcare, utility, higher education, and government data to price future deals. A great conversation, great presentation coming up about how to find out pricing information as you're looking out there for sourcing new deals. If you haven't signed up for that webinar, you can find the link on the events calendar at accountsrecovery.net. So we'll hope to see you back for that tomorrow, 1 o'clock Eastern. Until then, everybody, enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you so much for being here, and we look forward to seeing everybody soon. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.